Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, I am always thrilled when an author chooses to come back for a second time, and today we have the very special author, Laurel A. Rockefeller, with us. Laurel was born, raised, and educated in Lincoln, Nebraska, and is the author of over 20 books published and self-published since August of 2012, and in languages ranging from Welsh to Spanish to Chinese and everything in between. A dedicated scholar and biographical historian, Laurel is passionate about education and improving history literacy worldwide. With her lyrical writing style, her books are as beautiful to read as they are informative. And in her spare time, she enjoys spending time with her cockatiels, traveling to historic places in both the United States and United Kingdom, and watching classic motion pictures and classic television series. Some of her favorites: Star Trek, Doctor Who, original Battlestar Galactica, and Babylon 5. And it is for sure my honor and pleasure to share this amazing historical author with you. So welcome back, Laurel.
It's nice to be here. I'm here a few weeks before I thought I would be. I finished Cleopatra early. What do you know?
You are prolific and efficient, aren't you?
Yes, very much.
I love that. Well, today we are going to learn more about your most recent title, Cleopatra, the exciting true story of Egypt's last pharaoh, a most famous queen known at least by name by nearly everyone, I'm sure. And I'm certain that what we think we know and what may be a fact are two different things. And so I really want to get to some of the truths today. But before we delve into Cleopatra, I am sure your researcher and historian in you took you all around ancient Egypt. So if you wouldn't mind, tell us a bit about that journey. And did you find out any fascinating pieces of information that you would like to share?
Well, you know, most people seem to have a lot of fascination with Egypt. I'm one of these people who thinks that ancient Scotland is more interesting than ancient Egypt is. So for me, it was really stepping outside of my comfort zone. And of course, I was in Alexandria with a book prior to this, with Hypatia of Alexandria, which of course is covering the really aftermath of Constantine's reign. So she was born, I'm not looking at any dates here, I'm going off the top of my head, I may be wrong, I think it was around 355 Common Era to 415 Common Era she lived. She was 60 years old when Hypatia died. Well, she was murdered, if you remember our last broadcast,
right.
You found that Hypatia was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
But going to ancient Egypt was really out of my comfort zone. So here are some of the interesting things you probably don't know about ancient Egypt. First, nearly everything that we associate with ancient Egypt actually isn't all that ancient. It only dates to the names, the big names we know, King Tut, Nefertiti, all of those. They only date to the New Kingdom, which was from 1550 to 1075 before the Common Era. So you're only talking about 3,000 to 4,000 years ago. It wasn't that long ago, as far as antiquity is concerned. One of the big monuments, the Temple of Amun-Ra in Karnak. Well, what you don't know is, and this is from the Old Kingdom. The Old Kingdom was from 2,575 to 2,130 before the Common Era. We think of ancient Egypt as being like the first civilization, the most ancient civilization. That's the way we're taught in school. But it's actually younger than Stonehenge, the Stones of Sennet, and really all of the megalithic monuments that we really love about ancient Britain, about England, Scotland, Wales. Those monuments are all older than the Temple of Karnak. Temple of Karnak only dates to 2000 BCE. And Stonehenge and all of those monuments up in what we call now the United Kingdom, those were all built before then.
Wow.
Completely unexpected, right?
Right.
The word pharaoh, we think that's Egyptian, right?
Yes.
It's Hebrew.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. I get that.
It's Hebrew. We get the word pharaoh from the Bible.
Yes.
And that was not used until about 1200 BCE. So again, Third Kingdom. You've heard of the Battle of Armageddon, right? From religion? Well, there was a Battle of Armageddon. It was in the year 1458 BCE, And that was when the new kingdom pharaoh, Thutmose III, conquered Canaan at the Battle of Megiddo that year. And the Egyptians controlled Canaan and that part of the Middle East, Syria, and so forth, until the big drought of 1200 BCE. So that's probably the basis of a number of the stories in Genesis come out of that same period in Egypt. But that was the reign of Ramses III when the drought occurred.
Wow. So as you're researching, you didn't know this either, and you're stumbling across this thinking, oh my.
Right, and you know, I was raised evangelical Christian, so I was raised to believe all these things were historical and provable and blah, blah, blah. And I get to this and I go, okay, someone in Sunday school was not telling me the truth.
Wow.
But that makes it fun too, you know?
Well, absolutely, and it's fun that you are able now to share this with folks. Well, we did this last time on the show. We shared a bit of trivia on Empress Wu, and I really think people love to learn these little-known secrets, especially about these famous women. So let's move on to Cleopatra, because I know you have some Cleopatra bits to share with us, and then later we'll bust some of the myths.
Okay. First of all, we want to clarify that this is Cleopatra the VII. Her full name was Cleopatra Thea Philopater. There's three names. We're going to come on to why that's significant that she had three names. That was actually pretty common in the Ptolemaic dynasty. She lived from 79 BCE to the 12th of August, 30 BCE. So this is Cleopatra the VII. And that's important because the Ptolemies picked up on the ancient, on the new kingdom or Egyptian custom, I would say. I don't know how far back that goes. You know me. I admit to not being perfect with my dates. But they picked up and that habit of brothers and sisters marrying a great deal. So something you may not know is that Cleopatra pre-married two of her brothers, and they were both named Ptolemy. Ptolemy the 13th was the one that she had the big civil war in that Gaius Julius Caesar got involved in. And then she subsequently married the younger one, Ptolemy the 14th. Cleopatra was Greek. She was not Egyptian. She comes from the Ptolemaic dynasty, which was basically Alexander the Great came in, conquered the area, and then left Egypt to the control of his general, which became Ptolemy the First. There's a long story in there, and you'll see all of this in the timeline in the book. What's really, really fascinating to me is that she wrote a medical and pharmaceutical book called Cosmetics. Cleopatra had medical knowledge. She wasn't like a full-range doctor, but she would be the equivalent of a nurse.
Didn't know.
She was a medical professional, not just a pharaoh. She was a medical professional. She spoke at least seven languages, Greek naturally because that's the native language of the Ptolemies, Latin, of course. She was the only Ptolemy to speak Egyptian. And then there were several other regional languages that she spoke, probably Hebrew. And that's another one of the fascinating things. Remember Herod the Great? You know, we're starting to get into Christmas and the Jesus story and the Nativity and all this. Mm-hmm. Remember Herod the Great from that story, from those stories?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Cleopatra dealt with Herod the Great early in his reign. And you're going to find the fascinating things that happened between her and Herod because I show it in the book. So I'm going to leave that. I'm not going to give it away.
Okay.
But you're going to want to read that whole interaction between Cleopatra and Herod the Great.
And you say this, that the women you meet in your biography couldn't be more different than the Hollywood version. And when you think of Cleopatra, most people think of some promiscuous seductress, or they think of Elizabeth Taylor. And here you're telling us she was a medical author. She could speak seven languages. She was a naval commander, a diplomat. I mean, this woman was intense. So let's bust some more myths, because to me, this is just amazing.
I think most people are going to find that when they open this book, this Cleopatra is completely different than what they thought.
Yep.
It's just completely different. Remember how this was started by Caesar Augustus, by Octavian. Caesar Augustus. Gaius Julius Caesar Octavianus, I think, was the full name after he was adopted by Gaius Julius Caesar the general. But a lot of those were started by him as part of the political part of it. But one thing that we always think about is that Cleopatra was in love with Mark Antony. That's the first thing we think of, right?
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't. It was a one-sided relationship. Well, Antony was in love with her, but it was a one-sided relationship because she was married to Egypt. just like, and you're gonna, I'm sure we'll get into this later, about maybe people down the road in history have some similarities to her. But just like Elizabeth I of England, Elizabeth Tudor was married to England, Cleopatra was married to Egypt. She would do anything for Egypt. And if that meant using a man's love for her to her political advantage, she had no problems with doing it. Mm-hmm. Because she had one goal in life, which was to keep Egypt free of Roman conquest. So Antony needed money. She needed Antony's army and his legion. So she used him.
Did she have children with him?
Absolutely, she did. Mm-hmm. This was another myth, because in the movies and in Shakespeare, she only had one child, which was by Gaius Julius Caesar, named Ptolemy Caesar, or the nickname was Caesarion. But in fact, she had three children with Antony. In 40 BCE, she gave birth to twins, a boy and a girl, named Alexander Helios and Cleopatra Selene. And in 36 BCE, probably conceived during the honeymoon, Cleopatra gave birth to Ptolemy Philadelphus. Terrible with my pronunciations. I apologize for butchering that. So she actually did have three children. And we'll go into the next myth here. We get the impression from Hollywood and Shakespeare and so forth that all of her children were just wiped out by Octavian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. Mm-hmm. The three children she had with Antony were actually sent back to Rome. And despite the fact that Octavian's sister Octavia had been disgraced by Mark Antony divorcing her, Octavia actually took those children in and raised them as her own.
I wonder why Hollywood perpetuates the myths. I mean, why don't we know this true story?
Because it's more romantic.
Okay.
It makes better drama than to say, well, she had all these children, you know. It makes for a better love story to say how much she was desperately in love and that she was a seductress. This really plays into people's stereotypes and what they want to think of. But I think the real Cleopatra was far more interesting than the Hollywood version.
So lots to know, and obviously we can find this out in your new book. Now, you did mention earlier about the three names, and you say Gaius Julius Caesar, that everyone had at least three names. Why is that?
What I found, and this was an obscure little source on Latin grammar, I believe it was at the very, very end of the bibliography. And most people don't even bother to notice it, but three names indicate that you were a Roman citizen. At least if you're a man, because the women were not usually given their own independent names. Hence, Gaius Julius Caesar had a daughter named Julia. Mark Antony's daughters by Octavia were named, I believe they were named Antonia. Both of them, Antonia the younger and Antonia the elder. So it's a signal that you're a Roman citizen. If you had less than three names, that meant you were not Roman. You were not considered a Roman citizen with the full rights of that. So, for example, Gaius Julius Caesar. Now, here's something you didn't know. We think that Caesar is the last name, right?
Yes.
It isn't. It's Julius Caesar. It's a two-part name, last name. It properly should be hyphenated.
Oh.
His first name was Gaius, or Gaius, however you want to say it.
Oh, my gosh. Did not know that.
I didn't know that until I worked on this. Another one, if we want to go back to my first book, Boudica. Remember the general was named Gaius Suetonius Paulinus, governor of Britain in the year 60 of the Common Era, which, of course, he was the governor of Britain that Boudica was fighting against. Mark Antony's full name was Marcus Antonius Creticus. And another big one I want to put up is Lucius Cornelius Sulla. And he was a dictator of Rome in 60 of the before the Common Era. And it was because of Sulla that Gaius Julius Caesar, and he was actually Gaius Julius Caesar the Younger, because his father had exactly the same name. But Sulla was the one who exiled Julius Caesar out of Rome and forced him into the military. Sulla put a price on his head.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gaius Julius Caesar became a general because he really had no choice. He had to get out of town or he was going to die.
Oh,
This was all new stuff to me. I mean, I came in really not knowing much. I knew the Hollywood version, but that was about it.
Right. And that's what I think most people know. So this is really, really important. And yet I still think people are very much interested and fascinated by Cleopatra. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because of the reputation that she was given at the hands of Octavian and Shakespeare and then Hollywood, this long game of telephone. She's been painted as a sexy seductress, and people kind of find that titillating and sexy and interesting. We want to think, want to believe that this was this grand, tragic, true love story, that it was Romeo and Juliet, only it really happened. But the real Cleopatra is far more interesting. I think it was more interesting that she spoke 7+ languages, that she knew how to handle a medical emergency, that she was this great intellectual giant for her time. Hypatia was a giant in her 4th century of the Common Era, but Cleopatra was the intellectual giant of the Western Roman world in her time. And I think that's just more interesting. I mean, why can't we celebrate women for being smart?
Yes. Yes. Hopefully in today's era, people wouldn't want that romanticized version and to spell the truth out that, hey, this was a highly intelligent, important woman. And when we think about history, we think, oh, the women took back seats. Well, this is one heck of a powerful female.
Right. She took charge. She was absolutely in charge of Egypt. And you have to understand about the Ptolemies is that because they were Greek, because they were conquerors, because they were an extension of Alexander the Great, they were hated and resented by the Egyptian people. This would be kind of like if Russia came in and conquered the United States. Now, hopefully, knock on wood, Americans would really object to that, you know? But if there was a foreign power came in and invaded you, or let's go back to Britain, which is a little bit more my comfort zone, the Norman Conquest. Obviously, the people in England, Wales, Scotland resented William of Normandy coming in, killing their king, taking charge. That was really what was going on in Egypt with the Ptolemies. Very similar to the Angevin dynasty in that respect. So there was constant civil war, constant strife. There was rioting in Alexandria. People just did not like this Ptolemaic dynasty. And until Cleopatra, they didn't bother to learn Egyptian. They stuck to the Greeks. They didn't care. The public hated them. Cleopatra was different. She wanted the Egyptian people to love her. She adopted a lot of Egyptian customs. She worshipped in the Egyptian fashion, a little bit of Greek and Roman in there too, to be honest with it. But she called herself Isis. That's something none of her predecessors would do.
A real game changer, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She was unique. There's really no one before or since like her. Although, and I expect you want to know about anyone who might be a little bit similar to her.
Yes, I was going to ask.
If I had to pick someone, I would say Elizabeth Tudor, Queen Elizabeth Tudor. Because Queen Elizabeth Tudor was firstly married to her kingdom, as Cleopatra was. The 7 languages. Queen Elizabeth, I just actually saw a site that shows very clearly from, I think, the Venetian ambassador confirmed that Queen Elizabeth Tudor did speak Welsh, Cymraeg. She did speak Cymraeg, just like Cleopatra spoke Egyptian. Very similar situation there. But everything that Elizabeth did was to keep England free of conquest from the other European powers that wanted to divvy up England for their own purposes. And that's essentially the similar situation Cleopatra was going through. One thing that Cleopatra has in common with Anne Boleyn was that her beauty was based on her intelligence, her education, her charm. Anne Boleyn was not the most beautiful woman of her age by the standards of the time. Cleopatra wasn't either. She was pretty, but she was no great beauty in terms of the measurements of her breasts, her skin tone, her makeup, her hair, all those kind of superficial silliness things. What made Cleopatra beautiful was she was wise. She was competent. She knew her stuff.
And it doesn't seem like there were political games going on. I mean, she had a love for this land and was going to do everything she could to take care of the land.
And she would go to, there was nothing she wouldn't do to help Egypt. And therefore, she was much more liked. I'm not going to say she was widely adored, because she was still Greek, and everybody knew she was Greek. She wasn't Egyptian. No Egyptian blood in her. But she tried more than anybody else did. If that makes any sense to
you. No, absolutely.
So it's the fall of that 3rd dynasty. not their dynasty, their new kingdom, excuse me. See, I don't know my Egypt as well as I know Germany or France or England. I'm sorry.
Well, how refreshing if we had someone like her in our present day political field, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
She was one of a kind. Yep. She really was. She was one of a kind.
Apparently. Now, as you were researching her, and this might be an interesting question, did you find any similarities between her and you? Were you thinking, yes, this makes sense to me, reminds me of me?
The physical aspects of it, being very bright, being very educated, being very fluent in all these different areas of discipline and so forth and so on, I see that in common with myself. But also, my physicality is not the standard of beauty that we have in America today. I don't look like a Hollywood A-list star. You know, I don't, my face and my hair and my proportions and all this, so I don't have a body that may, maybe by the standards of our days, consider all that beautiful, but hopefully I have a beauty about myself and my person that transcends all that, and you don't really care what the color of my hair is or whatever it is. You know, I hope, I don't know, but I hope that I have a beauty that transcends all that silly, superficial stuff.
Oh, I love that you said that, because I absolutely adore you. I think, and we've never met. So I love the feeling I get with you and from you and the honesty. And yeah, so you've got one fan. How's that?
Hopefully after today, a lot more than one.
I'm just kidding you. I think you're special. I really, really do think you're special. Oh my gosh. All right, let's continue. So obviously a very unique person, and hopefully we can take something away and learn something. What can we learn from her that we could use today? I'm sure there's many things, but what hits you immediately?
That education matters. That you need to go to school, learn everything you can. Well, not just school, but you need to... She accomplished what she did because she took the time, she studied, she was inquisitive, she learned everything that she could, and then she applied herself and wrote those books and became the darling of the intellectual circles in Alexandria, which is a pretty big accomplishment. Right. Alexandria at this time was really at its peak intellectually. And yet she was the one you traveled hundreds of miles to talk to. And we need to have more of that, especially with women. We keep thinking that there's something wrong with us if we go to school and we apply ourselves and we get advanced degrees and we put our education ahead of other considerations. And that's the big lesson. It does genuinely pay off.
That's another similarity between you and her as well. So I think there's many, many, many.
I'm in good company, if that's the case.
You are in good company, my friend. All right, I want to talk about your cover art because it's exquisite, and you do this yourself, right?
On Cleopatra, I did not. It was done by Rachel Bostwick. That was the last time we worked with. We worked together. I'm now doing the rest of this. I already have the cover art for two, three, four works in progress I'm working on. We'll talk about those a little bit later, I'm sure, as we get closer to wrapping up. But no, I didn't do the Cleopatra one.
Okay.
I did the one for Ancient Heroines, which is the trilogy box set that this one is part of. And then I've done the ones that are coming after Cleopatra that I'm working on my research on.
All right. Well, we'll talk about those in a minute. Now, I want to get into some fun stuff here. Two Doctor Who Easter eggs you have for readers who are science fiction fans. I want to explain this and then share why you choose to add these fun little gems to your books.
Okay. Well, I'm going to read directly from page 3 of the book. Because I found that some I wasn't allowed to, because of blah, 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 put it in the description. I put it on page 3 of the book. So on page 3 of the book, right before you get to your table of contents, hidden inside this book are 2 Easter eggs to delight fans of Doctor Who. The first Easter egg is a character named for someone who traveled inside the TARDIS. The second is a phrase repeatedly used by the Doctor. Using your knowledge of the Doctor, as played by David Tennant, Matt Smith, and Peter Capaldi, and series 2 through 10 of Doctor Who, this is the modern era, this is not the classic, this is the modern era, those 3 Doctors, 10, 11, 12. Go find them. So there's a phrase, and it's a phrase that says repeatedly by that by a specific Doctor between 10, 11, and 12, and then, of course, the character.
I love that. And we call them Easter eggs because obviously it's like an Easter egg hunt that you're trying to find these little hidden eggs within the content of the story.
Yeah, that's a science fiction tradition. I think even Stan Lee may have been the one who started that, where he would just put in little gems for you to find. And Jack Kirby, of course, who did a lot of the graphic part of those wonderful series, X-Men and all that. And, of course, we recently lost Stan Lee. So I'm giving a shout-out to that because, of course, he's so loved in the science fiction community especially. But I put them in actually just because it's fun.
Uh-huh.
I like finding them in the films and other media that I consume. So why not do it? And I've had a lot of people try the Easter egg hunt. I have not had an American get both of them yet.
Really?
So, not American, and actually, come to think, I haven't had a UK citizen either do it.
Oh.
No one's gotten both of them yet.
Oh, interesting.
And you are invited to send me a tweet. You'll have my Twitter handle on the website, I'm sure.
Okay.
Send me a tweet with your guesses, and there may be a prize. I'm not going to make a promise, but I will randomly give out small little prizes to people who get it right. Not everybody. But you might get a chance to win something.
That's fun. You're awesome. I love this. Oh, my gosh, my friend. All right. So let's dig into what's next. We mentioned Empress Wu on Audible.
Yes. Empress Wu has been out for, 2015?
Mm-hmm.
I believe I published it in print. And I've been trying to get Richard Mound back to narrate another audiobook. He, of course, does the narration on Boudica Brings Queen of the Iceni and on Catherine de Falhoa, which both, Boudica was 2014, Catherine was 2015. After 3 years, I finally got him back to narrate a third book. And by coincidence, it came out within 10 days of my publishing of Cleopatra. I published Cleopatra on the 10th of October. And then Empress Wu finally came out, because Audible has to do their checks and all this kind of technical stuff.
Right.
But they released it about 10 days later.
Oh.
And so we get Empress Wu back, that brilliant, wonderful voice actor, very much a character actor, who is from London and from Bedfordshire. He comes back, doesn't speak a word of Chinese. I had to guide him step by step on all of these words, because there's a lot of Chinese words and names and places and all that stuff are all in Chinese, of course.
Oh.
And he did a really beautiful job. He did a better job than I think most people who've never spoken or seen or dealt with Chinese before could do. And it just came out really well. It's about an hour, like most of them are, between about 50 and 75 minutes. And you just have to listen to it. It's a great deal of fun, and then, of course, under $10, which probably helps on your holiday shopping list if you're listening to this in 2018. It's a beautiful book.
Absolutely, and he has a beautiful voice as well.
Oh, yeah, he does.
For sure. All right, well, then where can we send folks to learn more about you, and where can they purchase all of your exciting books?
Well, of course, I have a wonderful website that I put up this year, laurelarockefeller.com and laurelarockefeller.co.uk, where you find the Amazon links to every book of mine in every language available, which is helpful because, you know, I publish in multiple languages.
Yes.
As many as I can. You can find, of course, the books on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Smashwords, iTunes. Basically, anywhere that you could possibly find a book, you'll find a print or a digital version and or both, and of course, Audible available.
Oh, wow. You are an amazing woman. LaurelARockefeller.com. Everybody needs to go there and check out the website, and you are just beyond words. So before we head out, any final words that you want to leave us with?
Well, I want to let you know that I am working on 3 to 4 new books right now. So it may be a little while before I'm able to get the next one out. I'm very excited to be working on Hildegard von Bingen, whom we met in the prologue of Hypatia of Alexandria. She was a scientist. She was, and this is 12th century Germany. So I'm going back to the Middle Ages. I'm going to stay in the Middle Ages for the next couple of years. Hildegard von Bingen was a composer. She was a physician. She was a scientist. She was a visionary. A fantastic film made in Germany, subtitles called Vision. I definitely suggest everybody check that out if they want to know about Hildegard in advance. You've seen the cover art that I made for Hildegard von Bingen.
Beautiful.
All my work.
That was beautiful. Absolutely.
featuring the nun in the monastery and all that. The other one that I'm really excited to be, and I need everybody's help becoming popular enough so we can convince the governments up in England and Scotland to grant me my visa, because I really want to work on Margaret of Wessex. She was really the last of the Anglo-Saxon royals. She was an Anglo-Saxon princess who fled up to Scotland and married Malcolm III, who was the king of Scotland who defeated and killed Macbeth. So I'm excited about that, because I'm going to get to bust on Macbeth. Mm-hmm. And I love doing it with Catherine of Valois. I get to do it now with Margaret. And she, of course, was also the grandmother to Empress Matilda of England. So we're going to have a lot of fun in Scotland, but I need everybody's help getting these books really popular and convincing the government to let me spend that time up in Scotland so I can do that research.
So when you say that you need everyone's help, what can we do to help?
Tell everybody about the series. Okay. Buy the books, Okay. Buy the audiobooks,
All right.
Spread the word about this. Kind of, let's get the series really up and going and on the top list
Okay.
with everybody.
All right. We will do our best on our end, because we want to ship you off to Scotland.
I can't wait. And I'm so in love with the Sons of Stennis and Orkney and all of these kind of things. There was a wonderful Nova episode that they aired on Halloween about Stonehenge. And I'm really, really fascinated by that whole area. I love the Neolithic stuff up in that area. So, yeah, I'm going to get my butt to Scotland. I'm going to go play.
Oh, gosh, Laurel. We love your passion. I love your passion. You are inspiration. So thrilled that we could share you with our listeners. And we look forward to more from you. So thank you so much for coming back and sharing.
Okay, sounds wonderful. Happy holidays to everybody if you're listening in 2018.